Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin. Welcome to Cavs, a podcast. I'm Nate Smith, and I'm here with Eli Kim and Chris Francis. This is not a 67% Chris podcast. It is a 50% Korean podcast. So we've got
that's right.
We're repping the peninsula. So we're pretty excited to have Eli Kim back in the booth after it's been a minute. Like it's been maybe like 6 weeks, I think.
Yeah, it's been busy. As soon as, you know, the season starts, we actually have to watch the games instead of speculating everything. So
yeah,
right. Good point.
And it's definitely been a different season so far than what we expected. I think 100% of us, you know, I don't think anybody thought that the Cavs. That Evan Mobley would be as good as he's been so far. B, the Cavs would be competing night in and night out. Even against the best teams in the NBA, they're still putting up competitive games. But what's really killed them in the midst of a four-game losing streak is just the injuries and not having the rotation players to get through the fourth quarters, and they seem to be dying on the vine in the fourth quarters. Any rebuttal there from either of you guys on kind of what ails the Cavs in the last four games?
I'll start off. No, not at all. I mean, you kind of captured basically the first almost 20 games, or have they played nearly 20 games?
They are 9-9.
Wow. So 18 games. Yeah. So nearly 25% of the season, you know, has transpired. So, and I think you captured it pretty well. You know, the loss of Colin Sexton, I think, is looming huge for the offense in the sense that he was a guy that was near the top on the team in unassisted baskets. So he was a guy that could create his own shot. And it seems like, well, now, frankly, we're down to two guys that can create their own shot, which are Darius Garland and Ricky Rubio during this losing streak. Those are the only two guys who could really get their shot off. And, you know, I think just there's so many bodies out. I mean, how many rotation players were they missing and starters at one point? It was just like, four out of five guys who started were out, and there was also two bench players out that were playing in the rotation. So it was just kind of insane, the injury luck that they've had in the early going here that's kind of contributed to the rough patch.
And honestly, I will say they played admirably. I mean, they played hard every night, even in these games where they're just absolutely decimated by injuries. Like you were saying, they're missing, you know, four to six rotation guys. They're still competing. They're still playing hard. They're having a hard time scoring points, and the offensive continuity is not where it needs to be. I mean, I think one game that who did they start at center?
Ed Davis.
Yeah. Well, no, yeah, but they didn't they start Dean Wade at center one game?
No, I think he started a power forward at, when they finally lost everybody. Yeah.
But, Ed Davis has played and actually played well, honestly, given, you know, my expectations for him. I think one thing I've loved about him is the way he sets screens has been really a breath of fresh air. He's probably the best off-ball screen setter Well, he's definitely the best screen setter on the team. And he's set up guys to get open shots from three with his off-ball screening. That's been really nice to see, but obviously not a guy that he's definitely going to break down if you play him a lot of minutes. I mean, he's a guy you can come in and spot and maybe get.
Yeah, you could tell he was already worn out after that really good game. He was already worn out, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's been super fun to watch, and they've been entertaining every single game. Eli, anything to add on, you know, just what the first 18 games have looked like and then, you know, especially this last four?
Yeah, I mean, obviously losing four in a row is never good, but, you know, these teams were very good and the Cavs were definitely very undermanned. I also saw this interesting stat today on Twitter. I did not verify independently, so forgive me if it's incorrect, but I think the Cavs have played of all 18 games, only two games have been come against opponents with losing records so far this season. Wow. So
that certainly seems legitimate. Schedule
exactly, it
than.
Feels correct.
And surprisingly, I think one of those teams is the Hawks, who is like one game under 500 because they've lately been winning, but they're still they had a rough start to the year. So definitely been a tough way to start the year, but maybe I'm such a pessimist, it's not good for me. But the Cavs, let's not forget, did start the season last year at 8-9 at a similar point before the rails came off. Although this year, definitely, you know, admittingly, watching, seeing the effort level, seeing the different pieces work together better, it definitely feels different than last year's start. So I'm encouraged, cautiously optimistic, and would definitely be glad to be wrong on my. I did pick the over. I went back to make sure I was correct on this. I picked the over on 26.5 wins. I think I said they were going to win 27 games. I think I'm going to gladly be wrong on that this year. So that's my kind of take on the
first
season. They're
going to win a lot more than 27, is what you're saying.
I sincerely hope so.
A significant amount more than 27.
Last I checked, I think the pace was 42 right now. So
yeah. Well, it would be 41 since there's 82 games.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Oh, yeah.
If my math checks out. But, yeah, it's definitely been an interesting season, a lot of fun. I will say I've got a question for you guys, and it's a little bit of a bomb drop. And I thought this when it happened, and it was just gnawing at the back of my head when he went out. And I can't remember what game Colin Sexton got hurt in, but have we seen the last of Colin Sexton in a Cavs uniform?
I believe.
So, again, you know, Eli, have we seen the last of Colin Sexton in a Cavs uniform? Since, in case you didn't know, he's out for the season with a meniscus tear in his knee.
I did know he was out only because of the Kobe Altman letter.
Well, I wasn't telling you.
I am just kidding.
I was telling our listeners, but yeah, feel free to expound on that as well.
Yeah, so, you know, I want to say it's not the last game, but if I were running the team, it would be.
Ooh, flame. I can feel the flame coming through my headphones with the fiery hot takes of Eli Kim.
It's just tough because I don't think Colin Sexton is a bad player. I just think that on the Cavs, it's just not a fit. And the direction the Cavs are going now further cement that it's not a fit, especially with this big ball lineup that they're playing. In my opinion, I don't think it should be his last game, hoping that they could trade him for some other assets that maybe better fits. But I do think realistically, if Kobe Altman's still a GM, he's not going to want pie in his face for his, you know, his first big piece since after LeBron to be gone. So I think he's going to come back. But if I were running the team, this, unfortunately, would be Colin's last. That would have been Colin's last game for me.
Chris?
Wow. I mean, it's funny. We're on the same wavelength, and that's a great question because this is what I was going to say about the situation, which was I think that Kobe and the front office have had conversations with Colin Sexton post-injury. And my feeling is that he is going to be back. He will be re-signed. And I think he'll be re-signed to a team-friendly deal. Something in the neighborhood of something like, I don't know, like 350 or 360, something like that. And I think the reason why I'm speculating that this talk has already happened or that there's something possibly in the offing is because they shut him down for the year. It was the injury. I guess there was multiple avenues for him to recover or to see the court. And they chose the one that would benefit him, it seems like, most long term. But it would take him out for a year. It's the same injury that took Darius Garland out for his freshman year at Vanderbilt. So
I thought it was a foot injury for Garland at Vanderbilt.
No, it was a meniscus for him too.
Was it really?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And he chose to have surgery on it, and it totally, you know. And if you recall, like Darius Garland's first season back from that injury wasn't exactly, he definitely looked slow out there. You know, he looks different than he did, you know, granted, he was a rookie too. So, but I don't think it's the last time we've seen Colin Sexton in a Cavs jersey. I think there's going to be an extension. And that's why I was curious to hear from you two is, do you think there's been conversations that have took place this year? And do you think an extension is going to happen?
So I'll go first. I will say, you know, just before I answer the question, I am glad that he opted to get the surgery and take the long-term rehab path. I think these guys that, you know, snip the meniscus or kind of try to play through it are, especially when they're young, not making the best long-term decisions for their careers. And I say this as a guy who's had two knee surgeries, one of them being in a meniscus tear. And
oh, gosh.
And so he definitely loved to see that he took the long-term approach to his career. Nobody wants to see another Brandon Roy, who, you know, blazed brightly his first few years in the league and then played through knee injuries in the playoffs that he should not have and definitely hurt his career long term. So I'm glad to see he took that path. I do think there probably have been conversations. If, you know, I think there was probably a part of him that wanted to come back this year on a make good contract or a make good season to try and up his value in the offseason. And I think the Cavs probably told him, you know, we are still interested in signing you in a long-term contract. You know, some things probably happened there. And that probably gave him some peace of mind to sit out the rest of the season. But I also think his agent probably said, hey, you've got 5, 6, 7 years left on your career. Don't do something dumb just to come back for this season. So hopefully he,
right.
Well, it sounds like he heeded that advice. So, but I do think, you know, if I were to put odds on it, I'm going to say that if I were a betting man, I would bet the cat, Colin Sexton's played his last game in a Cavs uniform.
Whoa.
So
are you serious?
I it's a gut feeling. The second he went down, I had that feeling in my head because I didn't like the way he was coming off the court and I didn't like the way, you know, he just was gimping around. And as a guy's had those knee injuries, I just feel like, you know, I kind of knew that there was a shot he was going to be out for the year. It felt serious to me. And my immediate gut reaction was we might have just seen. So I'm trusting my gut. I'm trusting my premonition there. I got nothing else other than that.
Wow.
That was my gut reaction. That was my knee jerk.
Man, this is crazy. 2-1. I mean, like,
yeah.
Do you think that's panning out, do you think that's a majority view?
No, I think most people would think that he would be back. And, you know, given the nature of restricted free agency, at the very least, you know, he'll probably be back on the qualifying offer. But I could absolutely see a Lauri Markkanen situation happening for him, or where they do something, you know, to get a guy off another team for Colin Sexton, you know, and maybe, you know, because who knows what's going to happen with all these teams if they blow some of them up. So, yeah, I don't know. But that was just my knee jerk. And with that, we will be right back. Welcome back to Cavs the Podcast. I'm Nate here with Eli and Chris. And, you know, Eli, I just dropped an opinion bomb. So I'll give you a chance to respond. What do you think the offseason looks like for Colin Sexton?
Yeah, I think it's tough because there's not a lot of teams with cap space. And then to compound that, there's not a lot of teams that need in the NBA that need a 6'1 scoring guard, you know? So I just think the free agency stuff, like Lauri Markkanen is a good point. I don't think there's going to be a lot of suitors for him chomping at the bit to give him anything more than the mid-level exception for a player like Colin. And if he were to get the mid-level exception, I'm pretty sure that the Cavs would definitely match that. So it'll be interesting, but I just don't see enough suitors.
Like a Josh Hart situation?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that where, you know, Josh Hart got a big number deal, but in actuality, only the first year is really guaranteed at that inflated number above the mid-level. So that's definitely a good compromise for a deal. I think the only team that maybe makes sense with a Sexton deal long term is actually, ironically, the Thunder. They could pair him with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Josh Giddey and somehow figure that out between the three of those guys. You could probably start all three due to Giddey and Shai being pretty big. So that's the one team that I would be kind of curious about. But other than that, I'm just not sure there's going to be a lot of suitors for Sexton. That being said, another key factor I think that hasn't been mentioned yet is, you know, maybe the Cavs org told Colin, hey, you know, take your time, because they also want to see what Okoro could do with all this extra playing time and see what his long-term fit is with Mobley, Allen, Garland, and Markkanen. So I think it accelerates probably where you want Okoro to play so much in the development, given his jump shot has not been improved this season so far, albeit it's a really small sample size because he's missed a lot of time as well. So, you know, I just think the Cavs org is doing the right thing. They know that this year they're kind of playing with house money, so why not give Okoro a chance to develop as well while, you know, not having to risk pissing off Sexton, not playing Sexton a lot. So I think it's the right move to make. Let Sexton take the year and recover. Although, candidly, I'll be honest, my brother has gone through a torn meniscus, but he was a senior in high school and he played through it because he wanted to play his last year of football. I know guys in the NBA are obviously much more financially inclined to not do so. So I'm sure that guy like Sexton, who is a hard worker and super dedicated, he would have played through it if, you know, those other contractual factors probably weren't as looming as they are for him.
Yeah, and let's be honest, nobody expects the Cavs to compete for a deep playoff run. I mean, I think the goal is to just, you know, I think the goal stated pre-season was let's make the play-in game. You know, and
no, compete, just compete for a play-in game.
Yeah. And it's like, well, if you're doing that, I mean, what are we talking about here? Come on. That's not worth risking your career for.
Well, I mean, I think Kobe would want to be specific that way just to save his own butt. But
yeah, does anybody here do a good Kobe Altman impersonation?
Oh,
I can't even remember what he sounds like because it's been so long.
We never hear exactly. Thank you, Nate. The truer words never spoken. Exactly.
But
I mean, what's up with that letter? Like, yeah, so what was
gonna,
just a quick little aside here? But what the hell was up?
I'm going to give a dramatic reading of the letter here in a minute. So, but you know,
okay, my bad.
No, no need to apologize. I think you've inspired me. So hold on one second. So I love the title, which is just ridiculously pretentious. From the desk of Kobe Altman. A big giant capital A, as we approach the holiday season, we have a lot to look forward to as an organization. Our recent stretch of games has not changed my excitement nor my belief in the emerging talent of this team. We have shown toughness in the face of adversity, and Coach Bickerstaff has our team playing inspired basketball. Our players are not interested in moral victories or making excuses. They have demonstrated a willingness to accept the challenges in front of them and thrived in the face of competition. Inside our locker room, there's a strong confidence in our potential, and I'm looking forward to seeing what this team is capable of achieving both in the short and long term. And to Colin, who underwent successful surgery last week, we miss you, all caps. Colin represents everything it means to be a Cavalier, and no injury will slow him down or change his mentality. We know he will attack his rehabilitation as aggressively as he competes on the floor. His determination and work ethic is undeniable, and he remains committed to what we are building here in Cleveland. Everyone have a safe, healthy, and happy Thanksgiving. Hashtag CamelCased. Let them know! Exclamation point. And then a big scribble, Kobe Altman signature. You know, so there's your missive from the desk of Kobe Altman. Is it me, or was that a little pretentious, Chris?
I mean, it's a lot of things. I think it's absolutely pretentious. I mean, that's just number. I mean, that's a given. That's always a given. But like, it's also kind of it's. I get a sense of desperation almost. You know, it's a little. It's laying it on a little too thick, don't you think? Like, I feel like it's laying it, like the propagandist for North Korea would blush at such.
It feels like it was prepared by the DPRK news service.
Exactly. Yeah, you do exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Which is probably one of my favorite Twitter follows, which is basically a fake North Korean news Twitter feed, and it's usually pretty hilarious. But yeah, I mean, it is a little ridiculous. And as you said, of course, this isn't the first letter we've gotten from him. When was the last letter we got?
Wasn't it just after the hot start? Like, I don't know what the record was. I mean, like, was it like the first couple of games?
Yeah, I'm going to go back and look. What about you, Eli? I know. What's your immediate reaction to that?
I mean, it's just weird that the Cavs can't seem to buy a break 2 years in a row on the injury front. I got to be honest. I think getting too many of these is going to kind of irk me. I kind of wish that he would just do a press conference to answer some questions on the hot seat. And I think it's, you know, just interesting that he keeps putting these letters out at points in the season where, if we just look back to last year, we actually had like similar or if not better records after the number of games. So it's a little weird to me, a little defensive. Maybe he thinks the season is still very hot and he's trying to show he's, you know, connecting and engaging with the fan base more. So I think it's a little weird and tacky and pretentious, but at the same time, I guess if I was, you know, Kobe Altman has definitely done a good job. He's put together his team, his vision. Maybe he might be seeing something that we didn't see in hindsight, in terms of playing this big lineup. We've all laughed at Lauri Markkanen starting at the three, which has been a lot better than I could have ever imagined. So I'm going to have to give his props of the team that he assembled, but I still think the letters are definitely a little weird touch.
Yeah, and you know who they didn't mention in the letter is Dan Gilbert, which I thought was weird. And, you know, it's even more weird because we recorded this segment earlier, but I didn't hit record. So this is the part where Chris says, well, he's been in a couple games. And then I said, we've all seen Weekend at Bernie's. So So, you know, we intimated there was a body double there somewhere. So
that's right. Breaking news. Body double conspiracy. You're here to hear first. Cavs the podcast.
But I agree with you, Eli. I think Altman's definitely put together a roster that's been a lot more competitive than we thought it would be. He's actually embraced NBA size a lot more than he has in the past. Garland looks amazing right now. And, you know, I think the proof in the pudding a little bit is going to be, you know, you had said it's going to give Isaac Okoro a chance to start. I'm super excited about what that means. You know, we finally had a breakout game after shooting pretty poorly. He had his first multiple three-point game of the season. Last game hit three three-pointers. It struggled, and a lot of guys were giving up on him, and it looked problematic. But also, you have to remember, he's a guy that's only literally been in the league 14 months, has not played a full NBA regular season worth of games yet. So I'm more than willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's still just 20 years old. So I think the future is bright for Isaac Okoro. But Chris, I know you had some lineup concerns.
Yeah, I think the lineup concerns that I have were essentially on the offensive end with he and Jared Allen. They are an elite defensive tandem for certain, but they struggle to produce NBA offense on the offensive end, and it's going to have to get figured out. I have been a fan of the idea of Okoro starting with Darius Garland in the starting unit as opposed to Colin Sexton, for instance, because he's more of a lower usage role player type as far as doing the dirty work, doing defense on ball, off ball, you know, rebounding, passing, connective passes, secondary playmaking. So I love the fit. I love the idea of Okoro starting at the two. The question is, can they make the offense go? And that it's gonna be incumbent upon guys like Darius Garland, Lauri Markkanen, and Evan Mobley when he gets back, and Jared Allen as well. It's gonna be incumbent upon those guys to really produce, step up their game as far as scoring is concerned, to kind of be a more effective NBA offense with Okoro on the court.
What about you, Eli? Any rebuttal to that? Earlier I said you're laying back in the weeds, and now you're going to bring the thunder. So,
well, I don't know about the thunder, but I think that I do like how he's a more low usage guy than Sexton for sure. Although, ironically, I think it's been reported that Okoro thinks he can be like a point guard or at least a good secondary ball handler, which ironically I don't think is a good skill set for him right now. I just think he's so not confident in his shooting that he thinks he could be a better passer and ball handler. So, look, I think he's had some injury concerns. He had like the flu, the hamstring injury, so he hasn't even played in that many games. Let's give this guy a chance. Let's give him the opportunity to defend his way through his offensive troubles. And, you know, the player that I keep coming back to is I feel like he's an Andre Roberson defensive type of player. But unfortunately, his supporting cast is not KD and Russell Westbrook right now. So, look, I think that he's definitely has a higher ceiling than Roberson, but I think right now that's kind of his impact. I think Okoro needs to play. He just needs to shoot more. And I think last game where he made two threes or three threes, I think his shooting was a little different. And then Fedor of Cleveland.com posted an article saying that he was tinkering with his mechanics. So let's hope that that mechanics switch is definitely going to help him continue to feel more confident and launch the threes, because that's the Cavs definitely need that for him to be on the court for significant minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I'll totally agree with both you guys that those lineups don't make a ton of sense with Allen and Okoro. I think they can work, but I don't think they work with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen in the starting lineup.
You're absolutely correct. That's the big
problem. I think you can get away with it. Like, if you were starting Love and Markkanen, or, you know, Markkanen and Chetty, guys who have shown a willingness to take and make three-point shots, but it's, you know, really difficult to run an NBA starting lineup with basically three non-shooters on the floor. You know, and Mobley's a guy that right now in his NBA career, you want him taking enough to keep defenses honest, that you don't want to make him a prolific perimeter, shooter, because that's not what he's good at offensively. I would say the other side of that is I'd actually like to see Jared Allen step out a little more and, you know, willingly take some of these long jumpers. But the Cavs have kind of completely eliminated the mid-range from their offense, which is really kind of interesting, given that they were so mid-range heavy the last couple of years. We called them Team Flob for a while because everything was a floater or a lob.
You bring up two great points there, Nate.
I want you to hold on to those.
We'll be
right back. Welcome back to Cavs the Podcast. Eli, you were going to – not Eli, Chris – you are going to rebut
I was just going to say, you actually bring up, I totally agree with you, and I think you bring up a great point about the lack of mid-range game, because that's my main criticism of the coaching staff as it relates to how they're kind of going about coaching up Isaac Okoro. If you look at the stats, he's absolutely non-functional in the mid-range. I mean, I think he's shooting 6% from 3 to 10 feet from the rim, and he hasn't made one basket between 10 and 16 feet from the rim. And so the mid-range game is completely absent, and he's not really shooting well from 3 so far. He did okay for a rookie last year, but, I mean, is definitely regressed this year. And the thing that I wonder about is, you know, what if he had a game that was more similar to, you know, like Lamar Stevens, you know, who does seem to have that mid-range jumper. And if he just had like an elbow jumper, that would open up a path to the rim for him. You know, is if he could just get guys to bite on a pump fake at the elbow, it'll open up these paths that he can get to the rim. You know, and obviously that's what Okoro excels at, is finishing around the rim with both hands. So, you know, I think you bring up a great point that I wonder, and it's also an easier shot to make. I think the thing about Okoro's shooting motion that I've noticed is that because he's so strong, he has such a strong upper body, he just needs to flick his wrist. You know, he has a shot that he sets the ball up and just flicks his wrist. And I found that type of motion is a very nice motion to have close to the basket. But if you try to extend it with range, it gets more difficult to be accurate with that type of motion. And so I just wonder, why didn't they coach him up to just get an elbow jumper so that they can, you know, and so that would open up a path to the rim for him.
He doesn't even seem to have that in his game right now. And at all. Like, he...
He barrels into the defender every time, right?
And I think a lot of that's coaching. He has no change of pace. Everybody knows he's going to the rim. He's not shifty enough with the ball to be a Ben Simmons, where even though, you know, he's not a threat to shoot at all, he can still, you know, drive... And is shifty enough to get people off balance. And a lot of that is because his passing is so poor too, Okoro. But he overpasses is his other problem. Like, he gets around the rim and then just overpasses to the point of ridiculousness, or does that thing where he dribbles around for 2 or 3 seconds and then throws the ball to a big out on the perimeter with 2 seconds left on the shot clock and no ability to do anything. So But a lot of that is just seasoning for him. He just needs to play and play consistently. Yep. And I think he'll figure it out a little bit more, you know. So I don't know.
I mean, he has it in him. He had that 32-point outburst last season. So
yeah, and he had he had other good games last year.
Yeah, yeah, especially at the end of the year, you know, when he was playing more at the two position like he is now. So
one thing I've really liked, his rebounding has been much better this year.
Agreed.
He has really attacked the defensive glass on multiple occasions.
I like his work on the offensive glass. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
I mean, I think everybody agrees that one of his best traits is his ability to cut off the ball, and he's been really hunting down offensive rebounds too, which has been great for him. So, but I think it brings up another good point. You know, the Cavs have had some problems with wing depth. And we've seen Chetty Osmond been out now with back spasms, and, you know, Dylan Windler, we all wanted to see more from him, but I'm not loving what I'm seeing. I see a guy right now that's afraid to shoot unless he's absolutely wide open. And if you play Dylan Windler 8 minutes and he gets one shot, that is a waste of playing Dylan Windler in a basketball game. So I don't know. What have you seen from Dylan Windler, and is he sustainable long term, or is at some point they're going to have to cut bait, Eli?
Yeah, I was really interested to see that the Cavs picked up his option, like no questions asked, basically. So he's definitely back next year, which means that I think they should let him sink or swim and do whatever they need to do to see what he is. So I'm not a huge fan of him not shooting a lot either. I think that he has a capability to do so, but he just chooses not to. And he probably plays scared because he knows the hook is very, very quick with him. His leash is really short right now. So he has encouraging games. You know, last year he made what, 8 or 9 threes in a row across 3 games. So he has the ability. It's just that I don't think he's the most confident person himself because he's so scared of getting hurt or so scared of getting pulled. And I think another compounding factor is that Lamar Stevens is, you know, every coach's dream. He probably hustles all the time in practice. So at the benefit of the doubt, at the lower half of the rotation, Lamar is going to beat out a guy like Dylan Windler all the time. So I'm sure that plays somewhat of a part in the confidence factor as well for him.
Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what Eli said there. I think Eli made a great point about the inconsistent minutes that Windler receives and perhaps its effect on his confidence. You know, I think he's a guy that probably should be, is with the lack of wing depth that you brought up to begin with here, you know, he should probably be seeing something more like 20 minutes instead of 12 that he's been receiving. You know, granted, he had those early injury concerns to start out the gate again, you know, but I think the situation with him is, I feel like there's some coaching involved with it because, you know, every time he touches the ball, he should be shooting. You know, he should rarely be, you know, pump faking, driving and making decisions like he has been over the past couple of games that I've seen him struggle recently. It's apparent, you know, with the absence of Sexton, that perhaps he's, you know, doing too much, you know, trying to make plays that just simply are outside of his regular game, which is just hoisting threes and finishing at the rim. So I'd like to see more minutes for him. I'd like to see the coaching staff, you know, really emphasize him getting shots up. And, you know, what about a pump fake and sidestep three? You know, that'd be a nice thing to add to his game, you know, that wouldn't require him having to pump fake and drive and make decisions. So I'd like to see a sidestep three, you know, when they close hard, you know, and you can make a living that, you know, with as long as he is. Eli made another great point with Lamar Stevens in the rotations. If I can add too, is that, basically, if you look at the roster, Okoro and Stevens are the strongest perimeter defenders that we have. And the question to me is, and, you know, I'll open it to you guys, is do you guys see, Windler's lack of strength as a prohibitive factor in him cracking the starting lineup. Or, you know, to me, the question is, I think he can compensate with his length. So I don't know. That's an open question about whether how he can defend, what position can he defend. So I don't know what you guys think about that with respect to Windler.
Eli, you want to take that one?
No, I think I agree. I kind of agree with the lead up to the question with Okoro and Stevens being similarly built, similarly skilled defensively. And look, let's face it, Windler is not going to be brought in to play defense. He's different from those other. he's different from the other two guys, and he should definitely play into that by shooting whenever he gets, you know, a look off the catch. So, you know, I've heard this philosophy with NBA coaching as well, where, you know, you want your backups, you prefer your backups or bench role players to bring an element that's different from your starting lineup. And you don't necessarily just want backups who are lesser versions of the same players you start. So for me, I think it's ideally the Cavs organization probably wants Windler to be the role player off the bench that lights it up, can get you, you know, 5 threes off the bench on a night when he's hot. In worst case scenario, he gets you 1 or 2 clutch threes, you know, in his 15 minutes a game. So, you know, I think ultimately Windler's not going to be brought in to be a defensive specialist and to pigeonhole him and make him earn his minutes on that end of the floor, I think is not a good move or a smart outlook for him.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it comes back to JB's coaching philosophy. He's a defensive first coach, and I think that makes a lot of sense given the roster construction, but sometimes you got to play guys that can hit shots and live with somebody being an average defender. I think the biggest problem Windler's had is he's been super inconsistent when he has played, and a lot of that has been around the coaching and the lack of consistency in minutes, the lack of consistency in, you know, knowing when he's going to play. I think a sustained effort to give him 10 to 15 minutes a night would be super useful. I also get super annoyed that the Cavs don't seem to run plays for him. One of the thing that drove me absolutely nuts last game is the one shot that they got is they ran the old Kyle Korver play when they're running that pin down with the screen from the corner and he runs up to the top of the key and shoots that three. You know the one I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, the problem was they ran it on the wrong damn side for a left-handed player. Like, why? I'm like, why are you running the play the mirror opposite of the way you should be running it for a left-handed player? You should be running it so he's moving towards his left hand and he's right in his shooting motion. You're like running it backwards. It makes no sense. You're giving the defender, you know, 5-6 inches more to recover to. And I'm like, that's just awful. Why would you do that? So I'm a little baffled there. Like, they don't seem to run plays for him and set him up for success that way. So I was annoyed by that. And that's literally the only play they ran for him. And then they're running a bunch of catch and shoot stuff. You know, to me, part of that is on Ricky Rubio, who I thought was pretty lousy in the third quarter last game, made up for a lot in the fourth, but I really thought he played towards the end of that third quarter pretty poorly, especially the way he managed the end of the clock situation, taking a bad shot on a 2-for-1 and then taking a bad shot to end the quarter with about 5 seconds left. So, you know, I feel like the Cavs guards have to be a little bit more deliberate about getting the wings involved and getting guys like Dylan Windler involved and getting them shots. But I also say the other part of the problem is the Cavs need to go find another guard. And whether that guard exists on their team or whether that guard is somebody they got to bring in, the absence of Colin Sexton to me means, hey, you got to go find another ball handler because you're going to wear out Rubio and Garland. And now you're literally, you can't go. If one of those guys gets hurt, you have no backup point guard. So Cavs got to figure something out there. And we'll talk about it more when we come back. Welcome back to Cavs, a podcast. I'm Nate Smith, and I'm here with Chris Francis and Eli Kim. And we're talking about whether the Cavs need another guard. And, you know, to me, it feels like they do. I don't get the sense this team trusts Kevin Pangos to do anything other than run the zoo crew at the end of blowouts or, you know, the last 30 seconds of games that are decided. To me, you can't go through a season now that Sexton's hurt with literally only two ball handlers on your team, because you at the very least have to have an insurance policy. You know, to me, there's two options. You either go get somebody, and I'm assuming the Cavs would apply for some kind of disabled player exception with Colin Sexton out for the year. But I don't know how that works. And I think the other option is, do you take a chance on letting Chetty Osman be a playmaker again, or do you just live with what we've gotten from Chetty Osman so far because it's been really good and you don't want to screw that up? Eli, what are your thoughts there? And if you're talking, you're on mute.
Oh, my apologies there.
Yeah, as we've all gone through in the last year and a half, 3-4 times a day, if you're on any kind of corporate business, you do that 3-4 times a day on a Zoom call.
For sure. I agree with you. I think Kevin Pangos is probably nothing more than a blowout guy, or, you know, the 6-1 victory cigar, as some have called Darko Milicic, the 7-foot victory cigar for the Pistons when they won their championship. So, other than that, I do think the Cavs should make a move for a playmaking ball handler. Ideally, it'd be a bigger one who plays a little defense at the minimum, or if he's smaller, can shoot threes to kind of keep the floor spaced. So,
what about a guy that may have been on the Cavs roster last year, Eli?
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about. Dante Exum?
I mean, that feels like a really good fit to me, yeah, especially because he can play three positions for them, which is something they need right now.
Yeah, I think I like the Exum idea. I think another complicating factor is that Wendler would never see a minute for the Cavs, assuming Exum is healthy then. So that's not a bad idea. I actually like that idea.
Chris, any thoughts on that? I guess I'll follow up with Eli first. Do you mess with Osman at all, or do you just keep him in the same role?
I think it'd be really hard to take Osman out of the role he's in right now. He's been playing really well. Maybe I'm crazy, but maybe you let Okoro dribble the ball a little bit more. If Rubio and Garland are not in the game, which would be a dumb idea, but I can see them trying to do that for some reason.
Yeah, I think every time they've tried that this year, it has not worked well in actual game situations.
There's.
Yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think you're 100% right on that. So, I don't know. I do think they have to go out for talent at the ball handling spot, though.
I didn't mean to cut you off there. I guess my thing is I don't want to get into another situation like last season where they didn't go get another guard, and then they're literally signing Yogi Ferrell off the street and letting him play 20 minutes the next night. I'm like, what is this? So I feel like the Cavs really ought to be doing themselves a favor there and trying to find another guy. You know, I liked the idea of Emmanuel Mudiay. I don't know where he's at. He's been out of the league 2 years now at this point, so that may be unrealistic. You know, I like Exum, who looked good in training camp for Houston and had a nice deal, and then they cut him for salary reasons and clearly was a dumb decision given their record right now. So I don't know. What about you, Chris? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely could consider me on board with the Exum idea. I mean, he performed well in whatever limited capacity he did last year for the Cavs. I'll zag a little bit and say, you know, I think I agree with both of you guys in terms of bringing up the question of maybe, giving Chetty more responsibility. I think he's played well enough and earned the opportunity for more responsibility. I get the concern about putting too much on his plate and having his play regress, but I think he's young enough, and I feel differently about Chetty this year. I feel like, you know, he's kind of now, he's been in the league 4 or 5 years. He's seen a lot of the teams multiple times. He's still pretty young, and, you know, I just feel like he's matured maybe this year a little bit. So who knows, you know, and that was also the thing with his Turkish, his national team experience for the Turkey team, is that he was a guy that was a playmaker. He was a guy with the ball in his hands more, you know, a la Spanish Rubio. So, I get the concern about putting more on his plate after such an effective start to the season. Okoro at the point maybe should be considered. That's a way that you could stagger Okoro and Allen's minutes, you know, as far as creating more effective offensive lineups, putting him at the point. But, you know, I at the end of the day, I tend to agree with you. I feel like now that the team has Mobley, you really can't waste any time while you have Mobley on your team. And right now you're in the thick of the playoff race, you know, quarter way through the season, you know, find a guy that can help you. You know, I think that's where I'm at with the situation with Sexton's absence.
I'll throw another idea out there. No, is there any guy playing for another team that you feel like, hey, this team doesn't look like it's going anywhere? Maybe the Cavs try to acquire somebody there. And I will just throw a team out there that, boy, it looks like it wouldn't be a bad idea to see what pieces they might be willing to unload. The San Antonio Spurs don't look like they're going to do anything this year. They are 4-12 right now. You know, lost 5 in a row, have a negative point differential. It sure feels like that might not be a sustainable long-term team. And there, you know, there's a lot of teams that are hovering around 500 out there, but that feels like a team that's definitely not a positive team right now. Is maybe take a run at DeJounte Murray? I think that's a long shot, to be honest with you. But
no, it's a long shot, but I like where your mind's at. You know, I was thinking of Derek White also on that team as well.
Yeah, you know, or a Bryn Forbes, although right. He's more of a shooter.
That's more realistic.
Yeah, he's more of a Seth Curry than a Steph Curry.
Yeah, I like where your mind's at. How about you know, when you first proposed this just a second ago, my mind went to Sacramento. You know, is there a piece that can be had?
I don't think they have an extra guard though. Well, so but the problem with Buddy Hield is he's not a playmaker. You know, he's definitely
true. He's more of a scorer.
You know, and if you followed this team on Twitter, a lot of people have thrown out the idea of Buddy Hield over the last, you know, couple weeks and over the last couple of years. But to me, that's a tough get. I don't know. What about you, Eli? Any ideas there?
Ooh, I really like the Spurs idea. I think Derek White is having like an atrocious year so far, so he's probably a good buy low candidate. I also don't mind reaching out to the Kings to try to pry Buddy Hield, but that would be with the intent to maybe play Jetty a little bit more on the ball, playmaking with the second unit, in my opinion, if you make that move.
And that Derek White deal, I mean, he's got a $15 million contract, which seems really expensive for a guy that is shooting 28% from three and 40% from the field. Sorry, I mean,
that's a really bad slump that he's in this year so far.
Well, yeah, and that's a tough contract. Sorry, you were going on, Eli, and I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. And then I guess another kind of out of the box idea would be maybe you just say screw it and you go for Ben Simmons. Just throwing it out there again.
I know that. Wow. I didn't think it was going to come up, but it did.
Eli never disappoints.
Yeah.
Coming through in the clutch.
If you're going to get a star, you buy a low.
Explain to me how, and I'm not poo-pooing you here, explain to me how Ben Simmons fits on this team. Like, what's his role?
Ben Simmons would be... You would trade for Ben Simmons if you can't get Rubio to an extension. So my long-term
Rubio would
be
move in that deal.
Yeah, or you'd find him. You trade him for another 3-and-D type of player. But my vision would be that Simmons and Garland would stagger a lot. You can play them together, obviously, at points where Simmons maybe is more of that. You know, like that power forward, do it all point forward, fulcrum kind of guy in the pick and roll. But obviously, Simmons will also have a decent amount of minutes, maybe 20 minutes, where he's the on ball guy, directing traffic, getting open 3-point looks for the rest of the team. And, you know, I think it'd be a decent fit because besides his, you know, being not vaccinated and his mental health, issues now. He's relatively healthy.
You are not selling me.
Hear me out. Hear me out.
Sorry.
The Cavs already don't embrace not shooting threes, so adding another non-shooter to me is not a bad thing in my opinion. So, and he fits his defense identity would fit with this team and JB Bickerstaff's you know, team building concepts. So I still think that whenever there's a chance to get an all-star and you're paying below market price for him, you got to do it. And I think the playmaking on the Cavs is something that they still just don't have enough of, and he can help fill that void while also being taller than 6'2". So that's just an idea I have. It's a pipe dream at this point because I think – it's going to take at least a year for this trade to happen at this point with all the negativity and just not a lot of traction. And the other point that hurts is Sexton is hurt and the 76ers are actually playing really well without him anyway. So there's just, you know, off the top of my head, that's the only one player that I could see as a big playmaking guy that kind of fits.
Yeah.
The other pipe dream is Brandon Ingram, but that opens a whole nother can of worms, I think, too.
Yeah. I think a guy like a Josh Hart would possibly be available. Although from, you know, just recently, he's one of the few guys that's been playing well for him. So that's for them. That's a little bit difficult. But yeah, there's not a lot of those guys out there that are available. And the other thing that makes trading difficult for the Cavs is, like you said, Colin Sexton's hurt, so nobody's going to want to trade for him. Kevin Love's contract is really rich, so you either got to take back a really bad contract, a.k.a. Ben Simmons right now, or you have to move a guy you don't want to move, like a Chetty Osman, which, you know, one step forward, two steps back with the way that trade would work out for anybody other than a, you know, a high level starter or role player. So the Cavs, the contracts they have to move, you know, Dylan Windler, Stevens, those guys are hard to get anything for, given the way that Cavs salary cap is right now. And that makes trading difficult as well. The other idea, you know, that I was kicking around was, who was it in Houston? John Wall. Would you take a flyer on John Wall for like a Kevin Love? Either of you guys, or is that just...
I'd say if there's an opportunity there to swindle some draft picks, why not?
That's interesting. I think the problem is you may end up over the cap. Or over the tax. I don't know. What about you, Eli?
I would do it and take you do a buyout to get under the tax. you tell them, hey, this, we're only doing this because you're going to become a free agent. We'll pay you the majority of your contract out, except the amount that gets us under the tax. And, you know, basically Dan Gilbert would be writing a $12 million check for some draft picks, but I would consider it. I'll consider
it. See, I was talking John Wall to play point guard.
I think the problem is, why would he? Yeah, I mean, he's not going to start over Garland. So
would he be willing to take a? Yeah, would he? The question in my mind practically is, would he be willing to be a six man type, a player?
Yeah, or yeah, and there's a lot of fit issues there for sure, because he's never been a knockdown shooter either.
Exactly. Right.
So, yeah, it's interesting.
But neither has Rubio until he came to Cleveland. So.
Well, that's true. Rubio's
that's been right.
Crazy this year. So, and I think, you know, and maybe we'll talk a little Rubio and then maybe a little Turkey when we get back. Welcome back to Cavs a Podcast. You know, before we went to the break, we were touching on one of the things that has just been a true joy of the season for me, and that's watching Ricky Rubio play basketball every night. I think the good has far outweighed the bad, and his confidence, his competitiveness, and his willingness to, you know, just do whatever it takes to try and win every night has been really infectious for the Cavs this season. And it's really funny because he is shooting a horrible percentage, 38% from the field, but he's scoring the most he's ever scored in his career, 15 points a game, 6 assists, you know, 3.8 rebounds. Chris, you can kind of dig into his net rating, but he's been super fun and just a joy to watch on this Cavs team. I guess my only big worry is, is he a Cav at the end of the year? Or do the Cavs look to move him if they don't think they can re-sign him in the offseason? Eli?
Yeah, I think ideally I would love to re-sign him to an extension, but I think Rubio does not want to be here long-term. I think he's kind of hinted that Cleveland was a surprise at the beginning of the year. So
I don't know if I buy that. I think if the Cavs are only team that is willing to pay him an 8-figure salary, I think he'd absolutely want to be here. And they may be the only team that can afford to do so.
Yeah, it's possible, but I do think teams are willing to give up first-round picks for him right now. So I think that might be too enticing for Altman, especially if the Cavs, you know, don't stay at but at that 500 to the playoff or play-in kind of level. So I want him to be here. I just think that the Cavs continue to show that they're all about finding assets and finding value. And a 32-year-old point guard entering next year may not be that value piece, especially if you're planning on bringing Colin Sexton back.
Yeah, to me, that annoys me, and I feel like we're really going to find out if the Cavs were BSing us about being competitive if they go find another guard to play with Rubio and Garland, and if they don't, then it was all garbage. because I don't think the two-point guard lineup they're running right now with the amount of minutes they're giving Rubio and Garland is long-term sustainable. So I don't know. I mean, what about you? Give me some. Did you dig into the on-off data at all, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, Rubio is just a wizard. Like, he makes everybody. He makes so many lineups work. Like, he makes the backup, like Chetty Osman, Windler, Wade lineups. He makes work. He makes Isaac Okoro a net positive. He makes Colin Sexton a positive. He makes he and Darius Garland are an elite tandem at the 1 and 2 spot. So it's just crazy. His impact, his impact stats are ridiculous. I mean, he's right now he's ranked 99th in EPM. So, and he's ranked top three.
Is that percentile?
His 99th ranking out of the
overall.
Yeah, 99th in the NBA. Yes, and he's at in this. It's in the 73rd percentile is where he's at.
Still very good. Team.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's had a renaissance here. You know, he's playing. He's definitely taken his game to another level with the Cavs. So I think, you know, I think it'd be a crying shame. This is exactly what this is the kind of guy they needed to bring in. You know, this was a home run acquisition. But I mean, honestly, besides drafting Mobley, this is probably the best move he's ever made. Kobe Altman, in my opinion, this was, you know, a swindling of the highest level. And the fit was just like a glove. It's just unbelievable how well he fits with everyone, and how he makes all sorts of lineups work. So he even makes, you know, they were something like plus 40 with Rubio, DG, and the Triple Towers, you know, with Markkanen, Mobley, and Allen. He makes those lineups work offensively. Like, he's able to get the bigs, offensive production from the bigs, you know, so you could just even remember the play against Boston where it was literally just him orchestrating and reading the game. And he ends up getting Jared Allen a lob dunk completely uncontested just because he's able to manipulate the defense with his, know-how. So
and his eyes. I mean, he's
yeah, good exactly
at moving
yeah.
the defense with his eyes.
Exactly. He never looked once at Jared Allen, and just there was that mind meld already. You know, that's the other thing is that they're scraping the surface with all these guys because, you know, they brought in Markkanen, they brought in Mobley, they brought in Rubio. All three of these guys are rotation guys that weren't on the team last year. So they're, you know, it seems like there's more to be had offensively that can be discovered. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think, what kind of, if you control the negotiation, what kind of contract would you sign him for at the end of the year if you could?
Oh, man. So I would probably sign him to a 3-year deal with the final year, like a partial guarantee, like maybe like $3 or $4 million on the final year at, you know, 12 mil per. I think that's a really tough one to do if you are giving Colin Sexton a big raise and you still have Kevin Love on your roster, because I think that likely puts you over the luxury tax. But the other side of that is, who are you signing to get into Cleveland? And if you can re-sign a free agent and be competitive with that free agent and sign him to a contract that is at once tradable, and if it's not working out and if you want to move him, but that is also reasonable and probably not something he's going to get somewhere else, you know, I think you would have to sign him above the mid-level and more than a 2-year deal. I think that's doable.
What's your upper limit?
Probably 14, 15 million, anywhere from 14 to 16, depending on where the salary cap comes back. And then, like I said, a 3-year deal with a 3rd year is a partial guarantee. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that contract, Eli? I know you're a contract guy.
Yeah, I mean, I'd actually go even higher. I'd be willing to give him Rubio 2 years for 30 million total.
Well, yeah, that's about where I was at. I said 14 yeah. to 16. So I was talking per year. Sorry. So yeah. I'm thinking, you know, 3-year, $45 million contract, but that last year is only a partial, you know, 3-4 million guaranteed.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's about it. I mean, he's making 17 now. That's kind of the, I think that's definitely where his agent will definitely want the starting point to be. And I could see the Cavs being like, hey, look, maybe we give you 351,
but you're not getting the mid-level more than the mid-level from anyone else.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a very, you know, it's definitely above market, but it's kind of wouldn't surprise me. And it wouldn't be like a grand slam deal, but it'd still be a good solid deal for the Cavs, I think, at that number.
So, question for you, does, if you had to put odds on whether Ricky Rubio is going to be a Cav after the trade deadline and then next year, what are those odds?
Oof. I think after a trade deadline, I'd say it's 60% he'd be a Cav. In the off season, I'll say it's 50-50.
Interesting. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the Eli's numbers kind of surprised me there for a second. It's a little more optimistic than I would have thought. I almost get this is kind of a reverse jinx, but I also kind of believe this as well. I don't see him. I feel like kind of what Eli alluded to before with Kobe Altman being like a wheeler and dealer acquisition mode, you know, treat the team like a spreadsheet type deal, that there's no chance he's here by the deadline. I feel like there's no chance he's going to re-sign, which would be a crying, absolute crying shame. I would be totally against it. I want to lock him up. I want him to be a Cav till he retires, because I just think his value to Sexton and Garland can't be measured solely by what he produces on the court.
Nice. So I'm going to bring up another guy that I think has played really well of late, and that's Dean Wade. And I think we all saw something from him in the way that he played against the Nets. A really nice defense on Kevin Durant, really starting to get his confidence as a starter. I think the one thing, we would all like him to score a little more, but I feel like he's, you know, extending out that ability a little bit. And, you know, over his last eight games, he's hitting, you know, around 37% of his three-point shots.
Nice.
You know, do you think Dean Wade, as his team gets healthy, you know, remains a part of the rotation, Chris? I think he's kind of earned it. And, you know, I hate to see another guy get in front of Dylan Windler, but his defense has been a bit of a revelation to me.
Yeah, I think he's played excellent. I think there's been an improvement this year based upon his experiences last year. And it'd be a crying shame at this point. Unfortunately, I'm kind of, you know, I'm a little skittish about JB. I feel like if JB had his way, he'd probably go to Lamar Stevens before he'd go to Dean Wade, which is quite unfortunate because
I don't think that's true. I think if that were true, Lamar Stevens would be starting right now.
I mean, that's, you know, totally fair point. And I 100% hope you're right, because, you know, I think he's earned it. And I think he deserves a permanent spot in the rotation should everybody get healthy. I mean, you know, what he did against KD was super impressive. Like, he showed quick feet, he showed strength. He showed the ability to challenge shots, make it difficult on a scorer such as KD to get his shot off, you know, which is exactly what you need to do, you know, against an elite scorer like KD. And now his shot's falling, as you just mentioned. So I think he's finally caught a little bit of groove. He's gotten consistent minutes finally, you know, after sparingly playing the first 5 or 10 games to start the season. And so I hope he's a permanent fixture, and I think he's totally earned it. So,
Eli, any thoughts on Dean Wade, or as I call him, Jimmy Dean Wade, James Dean Wade?
James
Dean.
he's been a good player. He was super impressive against the Nets, guarding KD. It's interesting. The Cavs seem to have these tall guys that are better at guarding on the perimeter than the interior in Wade and Markkanen. So I think that's a useful trait, especially if they do plan on having the vision of being big on the perimeter. So
I was amazed by Markkanen last game. I thought he was awesome on defense.
Yeah.
Just super disruptive.
For sure. And I think that Wade is ironically kind of a mixture of Stevens and Windler, where he can shoot when he's hot, he can defend when he's kind of in the zone, but he's kind of also not the most consistent player. He had probably one of the worst games right before the Nets game where he couldn't hit the broadside of the barn. So ideally,
and that's a young team thing, but he is 25. It's not like he's a spring chicken.
Yeah, and he did play all 4 years in college too. So he's only been in the NBA scene for a couple of years, 3 years I think now. So, I like him. I think he has a place in the rotation even when everyone's healthy. He might be getting all the Windler minutes going forward, but I like him overall and think he could be a good fit.
Nice. Nice. I don't know if we have too much other Cavs news other than, what do we think the Cavs, next few games look like? I think we all know a tall order coming up against Golden State.
It's a brutal schedule to, yes, to all the way until like pretty much late December is playoff team after playoff team.
Yeah, I guess it's not Golden State. I guess it's the Suns who destroyed them in, Phoenix. And then they play the Magic, and that's pretty much it for a while. Like, we've got the Magic, then we've got at the Mavericks, at the Heat, at the Wizards, then the Jazz come to town, and I believe they have among the best records in the NBA. Then the Bucks, the Bulls, the T-Wolves, and the Kings are finally like, okay, a couple of below 500 teams. Hey. And that's just in the next 2 weeks. I mean, they also, along with that, are playing pretty much every other night for a while after this or more. They've got a real nice five games in seven night stretch going up or five games in six nights going December 5th to December 11th, which is, I guess that's seven nights, but that's insane. It's a brutal schedule for sure. I mean, right up all the way through Christmas. There are no nights off in the NBA anymore. So I don't know. How many games do they have in January here? At the end of January, what is your... hope for January in terms of their schedule, or not January, December. Like, would you be thrilled with 50%? I would.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, especially given the injury luck that we have, we know that we're going to be out of Mobley for another week or two. No Sexton having to adjust to that, finally get some guys back, finally get some health back, maybe finally make a run at some of the poorer teams on the schedule at the end of it, So, I mean, 500 is, that would blow away. I mean, that puts us in the thick of, the top six, right? I think it gets us close to top six contention. So, man, wouldn't that be, that's just amazing to think about.
Yeah. I mean, and I will say, towards the end of December, the schedule gets a little easier, but man, do they have a lot of games. They have a nice three-game break around Christmas, and then it just gets brutal again. So, yeah, it's...
Is it a normal scheduled year this year?
It is. So, yeah, it just feels like the Cavs have played a ton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the schedule makers did us... Like, it was funny. Somebody did a breakdown of the schedule making, and it was clear... Basically, that all the small market teams got screwed on the scheduling.
Yeah. I mean, the Cavs have 19 games before the end of the year, which is insane. It's averaging more than every other day. So we're going to be busy watching and talking about the Cavs and hoping that they can get healthy and keep playing well. So, but it's a rough schedule. Eli, is 50% a pipe dream?
I think I'd be happy with, winning the winnable games, kind of getting an upset or two. So 50% seems a little optimistic, too optimistic for my take.
Yeah.
But if that happens, I'd be super ecstatic. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. So that's kind of all of our Cavs news. And then I just wanted to wish you guys a happy Thanksgiving. You guys got any big plans? Anything to pitch for Thanksgiving? Any favorite Thanksgiving food that you want to pitch? Or any Thanksgiving traditions that we should all start?
Well, I'll go first. The Thanksgiving plans is actually a little rendezvous with a couple buddies, lifelong friends of mine up in New York City.
Nice. So, Big Apple.
So, yes, yes. So just, you know, fun weekend of probably just watching a lot of ball, honestly, on the weekend and just having some fun, enjoying some time with friends. You know, that's a rare thing in the COVID age is, you know, getting together and everything. So just having a small get together with buddies of mine I haven't seen often enough. As far as food, we're doing pork tenderloin, so we're doing some barbecue.
Nice.
So, nice. So kind of unconventional.
So what's your prep method there?
Oh, well, have you ever had East Carolina barbecue?
Is that the mustard barbecue?
Yeah, it's actually more vinegar.
Vinegary. Yes, yeah, yes. Mustard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I have. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I don't know. It might be an acquired taste for some.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, okay. Good. All right. All right. You're a real barbecue connoisseur then.
I pretty much enjoy every kind of seasoned and smoked meat.
Smoked meats. Yes. Yes. That's what. Amen, brother.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I'm happy. You'll have to give us a full barbecue report. So,
oh, absolutely, you can count on that.
Cool, awesome. What about you, Eli?
Yeah, I actually, our family, we don't really like eating turkey. So, this year we're doing prime rib, and very nice. We also, you know, we still have a little turkey. So, I actually got some turkey legs. Just gonna.
Oh, that's a good way to do it.
You know, the best part of the turkey. So, just gonna air fry those things. Maybe bake them a little bit first and then crisp them up. In terms of things to pitch, I'm a sucker for Christmas ale. I'll be honest. I think the last couple of years of Great Lakes has been disappointing, but I think this year's Christmas ale is actually pretty good.
Yeah. My wife would agree with you.
I had a pitcher of it tonight. Oh, obviously not by alone, but I share it with some buddies.
Yeah, there would be a different podcast.
Yeah, and it was very good. You know, I was actually very pleasantly surprised and glad I got to enjoy that, indulge that with some friends. So
awesome. Yeah, my wife is a big fan of the Christmas beers. She definitely says that the Great Lakes is much better this year. She normally prefers the 12 Dogs of Christmas, which is the Thirsty Dog Brewing Company. And supposedly the rumor is it's the original Christmas ale recipe. And then the brewmaster went and took the recipe to 12 Dogs, for Great Lakes. Another Christmas ale that's really good this year is the, Bell's Christmas ale is based on it's more of like a spiced up, and I like Christmas spices, Scotch ale. Which is a more malty and alcohol forward ale usually, and usually aged in like Scotch barrels, but it's pretty good stuff as well. So check out the Bell's Christmas ale is pretty good. In terms of my Thanksgiving plans, so my wife is from an enormous family, so her mom is one of 10 kids.
Oh yeah, my
the
God.
Oldest of 10 kids. So, and until this last year, so my wife's grandma passed away in December, and the whole family usually got together at Thanksgiving, but they didn't last year, obviously because of COVID. It was a pretty small gathering last year. So we're getting the big group back together this year. So it should be pretty fun. We do turkey, we do ham. My personal favorite is pecan pie, or as we call it growing up in Louisiana, pecan pie. So that I will be trying not to go into a diabetic coma from pecan pie. And I haven't done it this year, but I'll probably do it for Christmas. I have an awesome smoked turkey breast recipe. And it's, so I'll have to, even though you might not like turkey, It is couscous and basil and lemon stuffed smoked turkey breast, and it's really good. So,
oh man, that does sound good. I'm hungry. Thanks a lot. That's all I need.
Yeah, actually, it's couscous and pesto and fresh herbs and lemon stuffed and smoked turkey breast. So, I'll try to save you some. So. And anything else before we sign off here other than let's get one back on Phoenix?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. One thing. I am I'm actually going to the game tomorrow. Nice. It's Wednesday. So hopefully they do get their revenge because I am currently 2-0 as a go-round
game. Eli bringing it.
Dang, that would be a huge win. I mean, if they got the win tomorrow, wow. That would
be a statement. Is Phoenix still streaking?
Yeah, they won 6 in a row, I think.
Yeah.
They're last time I checked their net rating, I think they're a top 5 defense and top 5 offense. So they're looking like championship contenders this year.
Yeah, and I thought they would have a bit of a hangover, but I also think they have I think they have the best coach in the NBA right now. And
you've been on the Monty Williams agenda. Yeah.
Train since he was in New Orleans and was the dumbest firing I can remember in NBA history. So.
They haven't recovered since, have they?
No. No. And the funny thing is the team they lost to that everybody thought it was a travesty to lose to was a Golden State team that
won
four straight championships. So.
Hey, and now, and also, I say Anthony Davis is kind of getting exposed.
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the other question. If things keep kind of going downhill in L.A., do you think there's rumblings of maybe trading LeBron? And I'm not saying to the Cavs. I think a team that would make a ton of sense for trading LeBron would be the Nuggets.
Oh, they would never go there. I think he would go to Golden State, though.
No, I don't think LeBron would go to Golden State. No way.
He's friends with all them.
I think his reputation would take a hit. Now, the place I do think he would go is New York.
I think New York would
be a place he would probably go in a heartbeat. If that opportunity became available. So what about you, Eli? You think LeBron, any chance LeBron is traded this season?
I don't think so.
I love it. Nate, you full of crap.
I think Westbrook might get traded.
It is a tradition like no other.
I'm really going on a limb since, you know, he's only gotten traded 3 times in 3 years now. So
Hasn't it been 4 times in 3 years?
It's crazy.
Maybe
it's
not. I'm crazy. Not sure.
I was Thunder, told it was an untradeable Rockets, contract. Wizards,
yeah.
And now, yeah, it has been 4 times. And now Lakers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it has been another episode of Cavs the Podcast, and as always, go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blogs Podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers.